This feeding of the multitudes occurs 6 times in 4 Gospels. Jesus did this more than once, and they're long stories, so they must have a great meaning. But we're going to pass by that to the first part because it's very interesting in Matthew here. Before we do, though, we have to notice that before Jesus performs this miracle of incredible abundance of graces and not only the kingdom of heaven, but what he wants to do in our lives, even now, he waits until they are almost completely out of food before he performs the miracle. So we often find he lets us get to the bottom, and then suddenly God is waiting for us down there. You wonder why it takes him so long, but this is the pattern of God. So we see this here, and then we get a clue when it happens in our lives, which as we grow in maturity, God tends to act that way, teaching us trust. So he waits longer and longer in some lives. So we have today, John the Baptist has died, and Jesus, hearing this, needs time to himself. We know that they were cousins, but they didn't know each other. John said, I did not know him. They only met probably at the visitation, and then Joachim and Anne, you know, John's parents being very old, they passed him on to a group in the desert, probably the Essenes, and Jesus was raised in Nazareth. That's quite a distance. And so, however, Jesus knew who John was, even if John didn't know the opposite. And this is John, when he was martyred, Jesus knows he's next. The clock is ticking. And in a way, we've all kind of been through this with the coronavirus. We all have a better sense of our mortality or vulnerability or that things can happen without warning and we're not prepared for them. And so it is an invitation to think and to pray. So Jesus sets an example for us. He's surrounded by people on the shore and he thinks of some place to go that's a deserted place and goes off, leaves the disciples, gets in the boats in Capernaum, one of the disciples' family's boats, you know, and goes out on the water. And so there he sits. We know that his plans got interrupted when he got to the far shore to continue his retreat. He found that same crowd waiting for him. But so he must have known that. So he's fully God and fully human. As God, he would have known they were there. As a human being, he needed to pray because he gave up his omniscience because he was limited by a human brain while he lived on earth. He gave up everything for us temporarily. So for 33 years, the human part needed to communicate with God. I think it'd be like an internet connection or something, but I don't know. But in any case, he sets this example. And I love this image because you see Jesus out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee praying because that's the only place he could get away. He found some creative way of getting away from everybody. And so they didn't think of getting a boat and going out there. Maybe they didn't have the nerve to do that. So Jesus is praying out there. And in some ways, he looks like he's sort of surprised to find them there on the shore. We don't really know how much he knew beforehand. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. But he gets to the shore and finds that his plans are going to change. So it's one of those right-angled moments where Jesus is diverted away from his prayer time and now is going to feed the crowd. And he jumps right in. So his mission is then, he finds his mission in the sacrament of the moment. The moment was, here's the multitude. And of course, the disciples have also followed him around, and they're waiting there, and they have no food. And there's this place where this probably took place is, you know, there's no Safeway nearby, you know what I mean? That there's just nothing there. And so Jesus, they run out of food. So, but Jesus is there. What's he doing in the middle of the lake? He's probably in a bit of grief and a recentering. Why am I here? What is the purpose of my life? And we find in times like this that we're going through, name your trouble. We've got one for everybody in this country right now and in the world. But it can be an opportunity to rethink our lives. Where am I going? What is my prayer time like? Many can't come right now to church for various reasons. You know, and some diocese in California, the churches are completely locked, and they're in the parking lots. You can get away with it down there, you know. But what am I doing? I'm going to say this again. we have to deepen our own personal spiritual lives in order to get through this. We could take for granted that we could come to church in the United States anytime we wanted, and then suddenly we find we're in a new world here. So especially those who are listening live stream and aren't able to come for various reasons, am I praying the rosary? Am I reading the scriptures? You know, we can read them every day. There are many apps and online things, or we have books here, the missalettes, you know, that we can't use in the church right now. And am I able to just talk with God like Jesus did? And where am I going? What is life all about? And, you know, St. Paul gives us this hint about it. You know, he keeps his eyes on heaven. He says, if I know where I'm going, then I can get through anything. I keep my eyes on Jesus. You know, he wins. This life is very temporary. And you see, God's giving the whole world a message because it's not listening. But we should be able to get the message right away, is that we are loved and we're going to go through something, this may not be the last thing we go through, but in the end, our Lord has everything under control. It will all be for our good. And if we yield to him, he'll fill us with an abundance of new gifts we would never have if this hadn't happened. I was thinking of this book. I went on a... After my mother died, I was more or less her caregiver for 18 months, you know, partly working, and then I took some time off, and it was very intense. And some of you have been through this caregiving bit, and it was really hard when she passed away. It was kind of like one day you'd pray, please take her, Lord. You know, it was awful. And then the next day you'd say, well, wait one more day. And when she finally passed, you get this mixture of grief and relief, and then you feel bad that you feel relief for her and for yourself, and almost everyone goes through this circle, and you have to work it through, and a little bit of anger with God that all this occurred, why this and why that, and so on. It just takes a while. So I went up here, I was living in San Diego at that time, and came up to Milwaukee up here to be with my sister and her husband and just kind of hang out there and look. I just sat on the patio and stared out the window for a few days. But on my way up there, I stopped in Eureka or Crescent City. I took the coast route, and it was Sunday, and went into this church, some church there, at Sacred Heart, whichever, that was Sacred Heart Church. And the priest gets up, and he's holding up this book, and I'm returning the favor now. Now I'm holding up the book. And it was C.S. Lewis, A Grief Observed. He's famous for many things like Mere Christianity, Chronicles of Narnia, and the Screwtape Letters, and many other really solid Christian books. He was an Episcopalian and just a wonderful writer. But he met this woman named Joy, and later in his life, he was a bachelor. He writes in here, he thought that was his lot in life. Then he meets, you know, the love of his life, and the world changes. And then I think she had cancer. I can't remember, but she died. And then he was very angry with God. He said, I finally reached fulfillment on every level, and then she's gone. Why is this? And this, in spite of all his wisdom in the spirituality, because this occurred after all those other books, he is writing in a journal his anger toward God, his feeling of estrangement, and this may sound familiar to us. It doesn't mean that he was sinning, but he had a real relationship with God, and all the emotions can come into play. And it's as if he went out on the boat with Jesus and said, why? What is the purpose of life? If this can happen, what's the point of bringing somebody in and then I get stabbed in the heart, and so on. And he's really brutally honest. And for this reason, it was so brutally honest that when it was published, he did publish his notes before he died, but under a different name. He didn't want people to know it was him. So after death, they put the right name on it, and it's a classic, and it's still out there. I recommend this highly to anybody going through grief, because of any kind, because it's very, very poignant. And we find, of course, Jesus going through grief, not only in this reading, I'm intuiting that here, but also at Lazarus's tomb, where he actually weeps for the human condition. And no doubt he's weeping with us, that God has to get our attention with all these various things, because whether it's the God of money or the God of we're going to, you know, we can keep our own health going forever. We can't. We have these various illusions. Oh, I'm going to go. I'm going to fly somewhere this summer, and then suddenly, we can't. You know, even the missionaries, they had their plans and then they got interrupted and here they were for 3 months. But God worked it to good. It was an abundance that came out of that loss. It was a real obvious and immediate benefit to people with what they were broadcasting. You can see that kind of like a parable. But we don't see the results yet. But we too have to work. It's a call to deepen ourselves. There's two ways one can go when we have a loss. You know, this isn't the only loss we've corporately gone through. Probably everybody in this room's experienced one, or if you haven't, one is coming. In these sudden death calls, like when my sister called and said, my niece died, the police showed up at the door. She said, oh, the police came. I knew immediately what it was. And I ran down there and so on. And you know, you just don't forget those moments. I've had three of those calls from all three of my sisters. And 9/11, President Kennedy, if anybody's old enough to remember that, it was in second grade. And boy, is it in there? And my mother, you never stop talking about when Roosevelt died. I got so tired. I thought it was from the 10th century, you know. You know what I mean. And in fact, when I talk to younger groups about Kennedy, I get that same glazed-eyed look, you know, like, oh, brother, get something contemporary. But, you know, then after 9/11 occurred, you know, that Sunday, that Tillamook was packed. Everybody got the message, but it didn't last. And I keep thinking, I don't know where we got this virus or why it's here or where it's going, but I know there's a message for the world. There's one good thing to come out of it is, you know, we really don't know what's coming next. With God, we know the end is going to be good. I don't know how people live without faith, because it really has forced me to think about, you know, I don't really know how to, you know, we don't even know how the parish is going to, you know, it's such a challenging thing to get online. I'm going to start doing some classes online. Brad's been doing that. We do what we can, right? And I think we're all doing what we can and trying, hopefully, to be kind to others. And some people losing their jobs and they're worried about family members, and some are not worried at all. And we're all in different places, but God is speaking to the whole world, because nobody's listening. So many people have tuned God out, you know. He may have to turn up the gas because we're here to be saved. We're here to find out that we need him. That life is a search, and many people have searched and found the wrong answer, and it doesn't last. So it's easy to see this, but the point of what I'm saying is that it can go one of two ways. With C.S. Lewis, there was a danger of him dying in grief and anger, and he writes this. He had to choose God when he felt nothing. And Mother Teresa is famous for having 40 years of feeling nothing, but she chose God. Teresa of Lisieux, who took her name from Teresa of Avila, she had the same black experience of nothingness, and she chose to believe, though she felt nothing. And we, in those moments when we're really on the cross and we don't know what to do next, at that moment we can choose to go away in bitterness and anger at God and blame him, or we can choose to have faith in him. And then when we're at the bottom, like the disciples were, and Jesus says, well, feed them yourselves, and they haven't got a clue, then he performs this abundant miracle, and they find out that it was all for their benefit. And this is what's going to happen to us, no matter what happens in life. St. Paul said he went through famines and the sword and being stoned to death 3 times, he says, almost stoned to death, and so on, not in that reading. And yet, you know, he's a canonized saint, and it all worked out fine. It glorified God, and he's in heaven forever. You know, it's really purified my vision in terms of looking at what's coming. Everything starts to fall into place when you take your eyes a little bit off the earth in the evening news, which is that, talk about bad news, you know, but we look at the good news, which is that Christ loves us and he's got everything working to good in our lives when we love him. That's a really great mission, ministry. It's a really great word of God for us. So, and again, in these readings that seem to be one after the other, really applicable to the present life that we're all going through, maybe personally or together or will be, we know that Christ, too, we're kind of sitting in the water here, not knowing when the boat's going to land or where it's going exactly, but we know that he's got the tiller, and he'll get us to the far shore safely, and wants us to trust him until we know the end of the story.